Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. Joining Chris Patterson and Rachel Malcolm on the pod this week is former Scotland and Glasgow Warriors star Johnny Beattie and Scotland captain Stuart Hogg as we preview the match with France this Friday in the Guinness Six Nations.
Well, hello everyone and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. Rachel and I this week are joined by former Scotland number 8, former Glasgow Warrior as well. A stunning player in his day, someone I played alongside. 38 caps for Scotland, residing in France now, enjoying the slightly warmer temperatures than we've got here. Is Johnny Beattie. How are you, Johnny?
Very well, Mossy. How are you both? Are you both well?
Yeah, good. Very well, thank you.
Jealous of you. But you've been settled down south of France for a long time now, is it? It'll be a decade, is it?
Yeah, near enough. 9 years. It's our ninth year. So we came out in 2012, Montpellier, with my old mate Fabien Galtier, and then went to Cast, then finished at Bayonne. And we've stayed through lockdown, potentially looking at a little role with the World Cup. We got our passports through during lockdown, so we're now officially French, which is really weird. Five French passports for our family. But no, love it. Love the quality of life, love where we are. Always hope to finish in this little southwest corner, and it's a great spot. So no, enjoy it. It's been a great time. And as you said, nearly a decade in France. Good fun.
And you're still loving your rugby then, I assume, in terms of doing a bit of commentating and covering a lot of the rugby at the moment.
Yeah, so just bits and bobs. Trying to stay involved as much as I can, because it's quite strange, and you've been through it as well, Mossy, when you finish, you do miss the buzz of game days, stadiums, atmospheres. As much as we don't have the atmosphere just now, it's great to be able to just to get and watch live sport and to be able to treat it as a fan again, not the pressure of the high performance and being terrible every week as I was towards the end. But, you know, getting away from that pressure, but actually being able to enjoy a game of rugby. So I was at the game in Paris at the weekend. I'll be up again this weekend for Scotland-France with the World Feed. I managed to duck around and do a bit for Canal Plus for their top 14 coverage. Mm-hmm. And we do a French rugby podcast with Benjamin Kayser every week, just covering what's going on in the wild and wonderful world of French rugby. So no, it's great to stay in touch with it. It's good fun. And I won't leave it alone yet, because it's, as I said, it's been part of my life since I was about 4 or 5 years old. So I'm not going to leave it dead yet.
It'll always remain part of the life.
Exactly.
I think, you see, one thing you said there about when you're, say you're working at the game, you're commentating, you're covering it, you have to be, you know, engaged in it. You said there you treat it as a fan. Like, when I cover games involving games, I struggle to treat it like a fan. I feel quite almost as if you have to be right analytical or almost justify everything you're saying and reasons for saying. Yeah. Do you find that, or are you a bit more laid back and just
I've always been quite laid back, you know me. But then weirdly, you go and watch games in top 14 and it's neutral, because I've played for various teams. You're there almost to enjoy the game, the same as Wales-France at the weekend. I'm either, I'm a bit French now. That's weird. But you can call it as a neutral and just enjoy the game. I'm not as laid back. So I'm in the commentary position with the British team next to Dmitry Yashvili, who's a mate from Beerus. And in between plays, having a cigarette. Like, I'm not that relaxed. No, there's different levels. So no, like, it's just good to stay involved. Yeah. And look, the sort of pressure, when you're so into it and the pressure of going to stadiums and the weight that is on your shoulders, be it with a national team or with a big club, and pressure from presidents and fans, and you know how it can be, it's nice to sort of finish with that at the end on a nice note and then move on and actually enjoy just purely for the rugby again, which is why we all get into it in the first instance, isn't it? So, no, it's nice to be back at that level, certainly.
The France-Wales game, what did you make of that crazy game?
Mayhem. Absolute mayhem. Actually, the detail of the game, I thought that Wales, in terms of a game plan, how they set up to play, they actually really outplayed and they outfought France in that first half, which was weird because for France, it was the first game, and no, really for everyone, it's the last round of games, but it's the first game they got to play in Paris. So I was expecting a massive emotional reaction. They love being at home, even though there's no fans. I thought, right, they're going to rip this Welsh team to pieces. But, you know, credit to the Welsh boys. They'd obviously done their homework. They'd studied well. They managed to make France look ordinary after the week before, where France had been unbelievable at Twickenham. Like, that first half of rugby at Twickenham was one of the best first halves I've watched in a long time. But look, I thought the way that Wales approached the game, the way they attacked off scrums, got France on the back foot. It was really hard for the French pack to get around the corner and defend. And then they just ended up soaking and absorbing and being passive in D. I'm sure Gregor, Finn, Hoggy, they'll have looked at the game and taken notes at how to attack the French boys now. Wales again at maul time because France tend to try and attack everything in there, which meant they weren't there on the floor to defend. So look, it sort of gave an indication of little ways that you could attack France and made them look vulnerable. So it was really interesting that first half, and then the second half was just absolute mayhem. But then that's why we love our rugby. So in the first half, it was more strategic. And then second half, the emotion of... So we're sitting right behind the French management team, and you can see quite subdued first half. And all the replacements, quite subdued first half, and then just ripping into the ref for the entirety of the second half. And it went from that and the frustration to then absolute elation and ecstasy for them at the end as they won the game. And look, I don't think there'll be many games that we follow in the Six Nations that go that way. Yeah. It was just phenomenal to watch and really special to be there and see how happy they were at the end. It was magic. Obviously, disappointing for the Welsh boys, but look, what a game of rugby. It was truly special. Great to watch and great to be there and be part of it.
It was. It was a one-off. I agree. The game the week before, certainly the first half between England and France, was sublime. Like, just almost on a different level to, in some ways, to other games. But then, as you say, a lot of the French, and not to be too stereotypical, but a lot of the French games built on emotion. And maybe just didn't have that level of emotion in the first half, as you say. But even towards the end, I mean, I was shouting at the TV. I'm the most for them. Passionate man ever. No, just a sheer frustration when you've got, I think it's about 3 minutes left and you're 9 points down or whatever it was, or 10 points, whatever it was.
And the resetting and scrums.
Just, yeah. Resetting scrums. And just
I think everyone's like, what are you doing at their TV at that point?
So French.
What are you doing?
So French.
What was the bench doing at that point? What were they?
Oh, going bananas. They're all shouting, zhoo, zhoo, like play quickly. And Baptiste Rand just come off the pitch and he's calling for scrums thinking he's in top 14. And you're like, oh. But look, I think as well, the stereotypes you fed into there, but French rugby stereotypically of the national team, you think disorganized, unfit, keep the ball towards 60 minute and they'll crack. Whereas I think what we've seen
is not like that now.
No, exactly. So, but that's with one change. So they've been sort of underachievers for a decade. The last time they won it was 2010. And you consider the depth of talent and the pool of players they have out here in the top 14, it's frightening. So they've really underachieved. But what they've got now is Fabien Galthié, Sean Edwards, so the best attack coach I ever worked with, an absolute freak of a rugby technician. You've got Sean Edwards, widely regarded as the best D coach in the Northern Hemisphere for the past decade. They also took him, I've forgotten his name, the performance coach, Thibaut Giroux, who was at Glasgow.
He used to be at Glasgow,
He's phenomenal as well. Total game changer, who went from Glasgow to Toulon and then came up with Fabien to the French team. So they're organised.
Who was an Olympic bobslayer.
Exactly, and played in the was NFL.
Yeah, he was an amazing bloke. Brilliant.
New York Jets as well. He was on the roster for them. So just a bit of a freak. And they finally, for the first time in a long time, because of whatever goes on in French rugby and your politics, they've got a decent coaching team together, which never happens. And they're actually organised, which they haven't been. They work off the ball. They chase balls when they go in there, which we've never seen before. They defend, they try. And, you know, it's funny we laugh. But weirdly, it has been a horrible place to go. So you've got guys like Jefferson Poirot, Vamahina, aged 27 and 30, have knocked it on the head because they were tired of getting abused in French media, French press, because they were guff for a decade and they were losing games that they shouldn't have done. Whereas now you can see at the end of that game how happy they were, over the moon. Yeah. They play good rugby, it's enjoyable, and they're a serious team. So look, it's good for the Six Nations, it's good for world rugby. They're about to host a World Cup in a couple of years' time, and who knows what could happen. So look, it's just great to see them back on a stage. Obviously, it makes it more difficult for Scotland this weekend, but it's great to see them back on a world stage where they should be, because they're a massive country and they're mad for the rugby.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. Before we move on to Scotland v France, what have you made of Scotland so far this Six Nations, and probably more kind of proximally last weekend against Italy?
Oh, so generally going back, phenomenal against England. Probably one of the most enjoyable games as a Scottish fan that I have enjoyed. I think everyone would agree. The last time they won down there, my dad was playing. That's the like for Mossy and I, who tried and never managed it.
Never came close, realistically, did we?
No, we didn't. And that just shows how big a challenge it was and how far we had come as a group, as a country, under the coaching team to get there. So look, it was phenomenal to watch that. And they dismantled them, let's be honest. And then obviously had the wind knocked out their sails, a break, and couldn't carry on with the momentum. I think if they'd had the game scheduled to be played and it gone ahead, they would have won. Disappointing, obviously, Ireland. Wales, for me, clearly, I thought they were utterly dominant again in the first half. Xander's red changes the game and you go on and lose it. And they were good for the money in the second half with a man advantage, so you can't really say too much. The Italy game, I think Italy have had the same result against everybody. They've been poor in pretty much every facet of their play. But I think for Gregor and for the players, it was more the manner and the sort of range of tries that were scored. Like, you had ones that were Dave Cherry goes over twice from scrum, scrum plays. You've got two length of the field, one from turnover in their 22, where Ali Price picks up the ball, shows great awareness, sticks Doohan down. Doohan, an absolute machine.
You would love to tackle him.
No, I wouldn't. he's been on the... Oh, mate, he's an absute... Must be
he's
munching.
He's unbelievable.
Must be so munching.
Have you seen his... Like, have you seen his speed and everything?
Oh. But then, have you seen his tackle break stats?
Yeah. Well, that came up at the weekend, and it was 13 at the time. I think he added another two or three in the game. And I was genuinely...
Yeah, you're calling on me to laugh.
In the Six Nations? Is that in like the four games, or is that just today? Like, it's ridiculous.
So that's the thing. The top four tackle breakers... are in the French and Scottish sides of the entire tournament, and they've still got a game to play. Yeah. But Doohan obviously leading that chart by a country mile.
I think it was 30. I think it's 30 or 30 is, tackle breaks. Eh?
With a game to play. So look, in terms of Italy, it was just the array of, look, ball off turnover, another try scored at around 22, good awareness by Hoggy lifting his head, playing to space. You know, Gregor's always been talking about play to the space, play where you think the ball should go. Hoggy links down the corner again, huge yards goes over. So look, it was more the manner of the array of different skills that were shown, and it was a sort of comprehensive victory. But that's been the case for every team against Italy. So to judge now the Six Nations, it all comes down to this last game. Massive, massive weekend for the squad. Potential to finish second, which would be absolutely huge, but that requires a huge result. And understanding also that France are going for a Six Nations title. So a huge game, but a great one to wrap up his last game under Friday Night Lights in Paris.
From your French hat, your French point of view, what will they fear from us? After, obviously, they'll temper the result against Italy. They will do, because Italy's defence has been poor. But they'll also look at, as you say, the England game and parts of the Wales game in Ireland. What do you think Galtier, and the players, what do you think they'll fear or respect most about us?
So Fabian, having been coached by him, used to talk about how he had great, and this is weird, it's going back to 2012, 2013, 14. He would talk about how he had massive respect for Scottish educators, as he called them, in the rugby system. So he's a massive fan of Telfer. And so Fabian was already talking about Gregor because he knew about him as a player.
Did they play together, no?
I'm not sure. So Gregor did Brive, Montpellier, Cast. I don't think Fabian ever...
No,
Fabian was he started off at Colombia, then ended up in Stade Francais. So I don't think they definitely played against each other. So look, I think then further down the line we'd have different conversations. He saw how Gregor's team evolved at Glasgow and he enjoyed the attacking way that they played. And look, Scotland now, they hold on to ball. When they hold on to ball, they're dangerous, and you've got boys like Finn that can cause absolute havoc. Everyone knows him in the top 14 because we watch him week in, week out here, and we see how good he is consistently for Racing. And that's it. He just breaks the game down with the men he has outside him in a pack going forward. He demolishes and steamrolls teams in the top 14 week in, week out. He's that good. So they know that there's an imminent threat arriving, that Finn's a good decision maker on the ball and can cause problems everywhere. You know, you've got Hoggy, you've got Hugh Jones, who came back into the side from an attacking perspective, looked on fire again. So look, there's no pushover. I think the scary thing with Scotland now is, look, they're going to be competitive scrum time, line out time. They're competitive in all the fixed areas of the game. They defend well. They can cause problems off strike. And we saw all those things in that England game. We saw how dangerous they were in the first half against Wales. So the danger for France is they play themselves into a trap because they have to win the game by 21 points. And how do you do that without really disrespecting the opposition? And that's it. They know that if you get loose, Scotland have got players that can counter-attack from anywhere and score points from anywhere. We saw that against Italy. You've got Doohan, Hugh Jones, you've got Hoggy. Finn can create absolute havoc. So, look, it's going to be a crazy game. And that's it. The French press is saying, is it going to be a win of 21 points? But for me, genuinely, I think it could go either way by 5 to 10 points. Yeah. And I think it could be pandemonium. That's why I'm looking forward to getting up to Paris and watching it so much. Because look, you've got two teams that are now well-organised. But before... You go back to before our time, Mossy, you'd maybe lose a little bit of dominant scrum time or scrum penalties. There's sort of parity in a lot of areas that means it's going to be a really tightly contested fixture. And I think that's why it's going to be exciting to watch. France obviously have to get 21 point difference, which means they're going to be refusing shots at goal. They're going to be kicking to corners. But Scotland know, again, they have to win the game or get close to get up to second. So might it be that they every time they get in 22, they just chip away at a lead and just stay in the game and just cause absolute mayhem and try and grind them down as Wales did. Because if you can get down to their opposition 22, as we saw in that Wales game, tight pods, they hold on to ball, France really struggled to get the ball back. So look, I think Gregor will be, I don't want to say quietly confident, but confident of there are certain ways he'll know how to set this team up to attack France and to strangle them and to go at them the way that PVAC's Welsh side did and came really close.
I suppose, Johnny, as well, the other thing, I suppose for me, a wee bit more impartial viewpoint in France is the British and Irish Lions. This summer, obviously, just confirmation that the tour is going to go ahead. It's going to go ahead in South Africa behind closed doors. But it's such an iconic thing, a Lions tour. Such a difficult predicament they find themselves in. But it's good to get clarity on that now. And in terms of selections or Scottish players' involvement, can you see many of our lads being involved in that in South Africa?
Well, firstly, it's just great that it's going ahead. I think in terms of the tour logistics, there was various things offered up. Australia had offered to host it with fans against South Africa, which I don't think anybody really wanted to go to Australia. You go to South Africa, you want to tour South Africa. Yeah. It's behind closed doors now, but you don't know what permutations or what movements might come about, if people might be allowed to go, if there might be 20% stadium capacity allowed. Like, all those things are still to be thought through. But I think just for the tourists, purely selfishly for the players, they'll be delighted that they get to go on tour South Africa. It's obviously going to be different if there's no fans. Some fans would be tremendous, but I think if you're a potential Lion and you know you're going on tour, you don't want to be playing at Twickenham. You want to be playing in...
You want to be in tour. That's what it stands for, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. That's part of the tour. It's part of the amateur ethos, and that's the best part of it. And look, in terms of boys that we could potentially have, there's tons of guys that have chucked their hands up last season and this season. And I think hopefully we'll see a more even spread. But there's plenty of guys, certainly, obviously Finn, Hoggy, Sutherland stuck his hand up over the past 24 months, has come from nowhere really, but has been consistent for club and country. Hookers, again, you look at the other countries, they haven't been utterly dominant in the championship. I know Dave Cherry's in there and he's starting just now, but you look at Fraz Brown, you could look at Stu Mack that could come back and do a job, that have been really impressive over the past 3-4 seasons. Xander, another one that people haven't really talked that much about, but he's a big, aggressive, gets through a ton of work as well. Like, I remember watching last year play against France, got through 20 tackles. Big Johnny in the second row, Hamish, Jamie Ritchie back row. You've got Doohan. Who else have you got? Sean Maitland, who's already been a tourist, Hoggy, you've already touched on. So there's lots of people that have stuck their hands up. But obviously, it comes down to the choice of one man. That's something that you have to know and understand and respect. And it's that one man's prerogative to, it might be a case of horses for courses. What does he think is the best thing to go and beat South Africa with? So look, I think in contrast to previous years, the team has been much more consistent, and there's a much broader base of individuals through our team that have stuck their hands up and said, look, I'd be worth taking, or I could perform a job. So look, firstly, it's exciting that we're getting a tour and they get to go to South Africa. And hopefully this year there'll be a lot more, a few more, let's say, Scottish representatives than we had in the last tour, certainly.
Does that make this weekend's game even more important as well?
You
know, one of the criticisms, I think, that was thrown at some of the Scottish players in the past has been their ability to deliver away from home, and obviously went to Twickenham and won. And there'll be almost all the eyes of the, certainly the Northern Hemisphere world, on this game on Friday night because there's so much riding on it. So it is another almost brilliant opportunity to perform away from home and maybe, you know, get one foot on the plane.
Yeah, exactly. But firstly, as a team, it's important that they go out and win to try and finish as high up the standings as they can. Mm-hmm. But with that, the respect comes from other sides and other coaches. Mm-hmm. And certainly, look, that was the biggest criticism from Warren of Scottish boys in previous selections. He said, look, I can't pick you. And it was something Andy Robinson used to mention loads as well. He's like, look, I can't pick people that when they go away from home, they can't get up, they can't focus, and they can't win. So like, this year was a huge opportunity, missed opportunities, it has to be said, against Wales and Ireland. But a huge win against England, which showed that we were capable. And this would be a great chance to double down and actually for boys to stick their hands up in the last game when all eyes are going to be on this fixture on Friday night, and say, pick me, take me, I can do a job in South Africa.
Does it make it, depend on the crowd situation as well, does it make it less of a challenge or more of a challenge? Because obviously the traditional support, even on Alliance,
is red.
You know, it's almost sometimes more there. So it'll be an interesting dynamic how that plays out as well, really.
Yeah, so weirdly though, it has, if you look across the board in the different leagues, it's made it easier for teams going away from home. The win
different
percentage
as well, isn't it?
Yeah, across everything. So the win percent and the win ratio has gone up across all sports and all leagues, I think. I know top 14 was ridiculous. It used to be something like 20% of teams won away from home on any given weekend. This year it's 38 or something. Like it's nearly doubled because the pressure of playing in front of the carnival is a French crowd and people baying for blood is slightly easier. But look, everyone uses different emotional factors when they play. I still love playing away. I don't know why they didn't take me on a Lions tour. I used to absolutely love it. I don't know. Honestly, I haven't had the chance to, like, I haven't played under COVID. I don't know what it's like going into an eerie, empty stadium. It must be quite a weird, it must almost be like going to a training, like a training.
Well, Rachel's doing it.
Are you getting
what's it like?
It's weird. You can hear, it's like, do you know what's the weirdest thing is? Like, you can hear everything the opposition are saying to each other. So, like, you know, like, obviously you're really tuned in to what your teammates are saying and your calls and stuff like that. But, like, when they're attacking, you can hear all their calls and really clearly. Yeah. The first time we did that, that's the thing I found probably the most off-putting. But you do get used to it. And for the women's game, it's obviously not as big a factor. It is when you go somewhere like France where you would have huge crowds at the women's game in places like that. But for us here, you know, it's probably not as big a shock to the system as the men. I can't even imagine how they've gone from, you know, however many thousand in Murrayfield to what they have now. But it is something you just kind of have to get used to, I guess.
See, on that point, has it made it easier in attack? So the amount of times that we'd play Mossy and somebody say, oh no, I didn't hear the call, or I didn't hear you calling for that ball, that's why I didn't pass. What I've noticed certainly is the quality of attack or people's willingness to attack has jumped a little bit. Has it been easier to heal your teammates on the pitch and then generate better attack platform because of that?
Yeah, I think so. And you're probably slightly less frazzled at times as well because you haven't got all those kind of additional distraction factors when things maybe aren't going so well. I'd definitely say that does make it a little bit of a difference. But it's kind of like all these things. Once you get going, you kind of stop being aware of it as soon as you start playing, and it's not as big a factor. But like once you first come out, and even things like singing the anthem to no one, like it's a bit bizarre.
You're singing it to us. We're singing it back to the TV. Yeah. Just keep going.
There's a difference between I didn't hear the call and I didn't listen to the call as well. You know, you quite often go, I didn't hear it. Yeah, you did. You just didn't listen to it. Yeah, go and get angry again. Do you think it's made that big a difference, Rach? Or do you think you're that used to it now that by the time crowds do come back, it'll be a shock to the system going back to playing in front of people?
I don't know. You know, I haven't really thought about it going that way. I do think the crowd bring a lot of energy, you know, like even just the little things, like when someone makes a break and you hear that noise just like build up, like that kind of is something you take for granted, because now like someone makes a break and it's just like dead silence, and that's a bit that is a bit strange. So I think it'll be a positive thing. I don't think it will necessarily have a negative impact in terms of people's concentration and focus and stuff like that. We can't wait to get fans back. And I think as well, you know, I feel for people who've got like the first catch, you know, you feel for people like Dave Chase scoring his first two tries at the weekend with Scotland and his family's not there. It's moments like that where everybody hits home. And you see CJ Sander like playing his last game for Ireland, and again, his family's not there. Like, that's the bits I think as players you miss as well. It's not just having that noise there, but it's those kind of memories and those moments which I think everyone can't wait to start having again.
And your Six Nations kicks off soon?
Yes, Rachel, hopefully.
Two games? Well, three games,
isn't it? I'm not so many cancellations now that I just like, until that first whistle goes in the game, I'm like, nah, it's not happening.
What are the dates? You've got England away and you've got Italy at home, is that right?
Yeah, England a week on Saturday. Italy 2 weeks following that, so we've got a rest week, then Italy, then we've got our kind of like grand finale weekend. So it's basically
set three out games in 4 weeks
cup structure, so three and three, and then we'll play whoever we're ranked the same as in the other group as our final. So it's quite cool, something a bit different, but yeah, just so grateful that we're actually getting to play, which is cool.
We're also delighted to be joined from in camp, Scotland captain Stuart Hogg, join us just prior to, during a day off, prior to just getting prepared for tomorrow's session before heading over to France. So I suppose first things first, Hoggy, great win at the weekend, 8 tries, 52 points. You could point to, you know, the Italian defence, but we got to score those tries. You've got to bounce back after 2 defeats at home. You've got to get the performance right. There'll be things you want to improve on, but it must have been a positive place after the game.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, our big focus going into this game was to get our Six Nations back on track. I think we'd played some good rugby at times. You know, our defence has come on leaps and bounds. Our attack has been really, really good. You know, 9 times out of 10, you score 24 points in a test match. You like to think you're going to win it. So, we just wanted to get back on the horse and get back to where we want to be. And I think at the weekend, perfect opportunity to do so. I think we had a lot of phases together, a lot of possession stats. Everything was in our favour. And we probably left, you know, maybe 3 or 4 tries out there. But, we were really happy. A record win over the Italians. So, now we're chuffed a bit. We feel we're in a good place. A huge amount of confidence leading into this weekend as well.
And did you enjoy your stint at 10?
We got the stats back in, and I think I was just under 8k in the game. So, like, normally you're thinking that's actually all right as a fullback. You'll be fairly happy with about 8k in a game, but there was a hell of a lot more involvements. And I had a conversation with Gregor a couple of days ago. He thought I could be attached to the forwards a little bit better. And more often, at times I actually forgot I was playing 10 and I was miles away. Completely different positions. I really enjoyed that. For me, I was really quite nervous leading up to it. I think it's a normal game, you think, we got on with a normal job, but then you realise you have to learn the line-out plays for the first time ever. You have to be like, what's going to happen? I was really quite nervous about it, but as soon as the game started, we got into our game flow and we got ourselves into some good positions. I sat to relax a little bit more, but yeah. I think the biggest worry for me was the goal kicking, and Mossy can vouch for this in the warm-up, especially the game the day before. I couldn't have kicked my own backside, and I was really quite getting quite frustrated and nervous about that, because I knew we were going to score tries. It was whether I could convert them was going to be the problem, and didn't start too well.
You fixed it though. 6 from 8.
One from the touchline was an absolute beaut as well.
Yeah, the story behind this one as well. So, Mossy, what was that, about 12 kicks the day before that I tried from that side?
About that.
And Mossy kept, I was missing him. I was going left. I was going, well, where? And he was like, go away and do another kick and come back. I went, Mossy, you know me. I cannot move until this is gone over. I'm looking, you hit this ball like a dead duck in the day before. And it just managed to creep in. I went, right, that's good enough for me. Did I get any extra points for it? Looking. So Mike Blair brings on the tee in the game. And I was like, oh, Mike, I've not kicked this kick all week. I
said, did you say that?
Yeah, I said to him, I was like, Mike,
that's like positive mental attitude.
Yeah, he's like, well, that's good. So I literally put the ball down, went back 5 or 6 steps and looked at it and went, I'm just going to hit this as hard as bloody. I've pretty much done that. I'd connected in the sweet spot and it went right through the middle. So I was like, yeah, I meant that. I really did mean that.
Never in doubt. Never in doubt. BT, you must have kicked a goal. You've kicked plenty out of your hand. Have you ever kicked a goal in a game?
Only one, when I think it was Dan Parks and everybody left the field against Ulster for Glasgow at Fir Hill in the glory days, and Big Al was like, oh, Johnny, just step up and knock it over, and it was straight in front of the post on the 22.
Nervous?
21, of course not. I know, I was full of confidence and stupid, so I stepped up and thought, okay, I'll do it. And it was, if I knocked it over, Ulster didn't qualify for Europe, and I stepped up, spanked it as hard as I could, as Stuart just mentioned, and put it about 15 feet wide. So Ulster qualified for Europe.
Wide? Did you miss it?
Yeah, missed it. Went about 100 miles an hour, but it went about 10 feet wide.
What about the game when you, was it last play of the game once when you caught the ball?
I've had a few, Stuart. Thank you for bringing this up.
This one was meant to you, like, this is a hell of a kick. Was it not a left foot spiral that went about 80? But then realised 4 points in the ball,
so,
or something.
No, it was worse than that. So it was against Toulouse. And the Heineken Cup. This is at Firhill. This is really going through the back catalogue. This is great, Hoggy. And is it the days where Firhill, you didn't have a clock? Do you know what I mean? It was like a tiny little thing, and me, game awareness age 21, didn't know what that meant. And so...
Can you count to 40?
Exactly, still can't. And for some reason, I think it was like 22 points to 20, and the ball came to backfield, and somebody screamed, "Use Beattie," and I was like, complimentary, I think. I mean, I need to kick the ball. So like, I leathered it, an 18-meter spiral, only for the referee to turn around and blow the full-time whistle. That was the game over, and I just lost the game. I was losing the Heineken Cup. Two absolute crackers. I'm glad I came on this. This is great.
I remember another one in an 1872 Cup game, Edinburgh, Glasgow. And it was, we kicked off, and it was back in the day where, right, the first hit's vital, everything, the first moment, the first instant in the game, that set a platform, it sets a tone. You caught the kickoff and just hit this beautiful spiral left-footed kick sailing right down at touchline. To which point we were like, right, Beattie's no interested. He just wants to kick the ball. Brilliant decision, brilliant execution, brilliant outcome.
Thanks, mate.
But it was, but everybody else was like, you see, he just wants to kick it. There's 1-0 already. Anyway, we digress. Hoggy, back to the day job, back to work. You would have seen the French performance at the weekend in the game. It would have taken an awful lot out of them. They can be a special team when they're allowed to play, but they'll also, through our experience as well, give you opportunities to get into the game. So is accuracy the kind of key focus for you and the team this week going into this game?
I think so. I think the big thing that we've talked about, especially this morning, was this is like the perfect opportunity to just be ourselves. And by that, I mean, well, we need to be defending the way that we want to defend, and we know we can defend by having trust in your own ability, by having trust in your teammates. Because our defence is, you know, we're top of the charts at the minute, but for us, that counts for nothing unless we back it up this weekend. We're going to come up against some of the best players in world rugby, you know, Dupont, Aldred, Teddy Thomas, Fakatawa, like X-factor players that you allow them time and space, they can rip anybody apart. But that doesn't change in terms of the way we want to defend. We're going to go out there, we're going to you know, hopefully put in a lot of dominant collisions, be in positions to you know, shut them down at the earliest opportunity. And on the other side of the ball, we have to have that clinical edge. You know, we're hugely excited about this challenge going across there, because we have the potential to finish second, and that's our motivation for this week. We win by 8 points, I'm led to believe, then we can finish second in the Six Nations, which no Scottish team has ever done before. So we're hugely excited about this opportunity. France, 9 o'clock on a Friday night, the second 6-day turnaround. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're on the money and get ourselves recovered to the best of our abilities, and get ready to go again, because it's a hugely exciting challenge for us.
You guys must be feeling pretty good as a team in terms of a lot of the, particularly the weekend, a lot of the attacking play you had, and a lot of, Johnny touched on it earlier, the different types of tries you're now scoring and creating. How do you feel in terms of where the squad's at and where you're moving to?
Yeah, we feel in a good place. I think for us, it's just constantly learning. And you say that, you know, it's an easy kind of thing to say after a defeat. You know, it's vital that you learn, but you learn in winning, you learn in losing. And as you say, we've got a variety in the way that we want to try and play, and a variety in the difference in tries that we're scoring. You know, there's times in the past that we could quite easily take 3 points, but a new philosophy, I'm backing the boys to front up and score tries, and we're taking quick taps, we're taking taps 5 metres out, we're backing our set piece, and that allows us to grow in confidence throughout the game. And it's just great to be a part of, to be honest. I think the vital thing for us is that we get ourselves into good positions and we keep the scoreboard ticking over, and we can just grow in confidence during the game.
Well, brilliant to get insight in the Campbell's head. Not many days off, and certainly it's only a half day off and a 6 day turnaround again and a travel day and everything, Hoggy. So really appreciate giving us the time. Great to hear the attitude and the focus this weekend's really going out to finish second in Six Nations, which would be an amazing achievement. If we could win both games in a row, it would be pretty special as well. So thanks for joining us, and good luck from all of us for this weekend.
Yeah, cheers.
Well, Rach, it's great to hear from Hoggy from inside the camp, and Johnny as well. I can hear how passionate Johnny still is about rugby. He's obviously settled and enjoying France, and you can hear the rapport between him and Hoggy. They obviously played together at Glasgow for a while as well, and it's really encouraging. I know it sounds obvious, but to hear how positive the mindset is about going to Paris to, with a goal of finishing second in the championship.
Yeah, I think it shows how good their culture is in the camp at the moment, that they can have had, you know, quite an up and down Six Nations in terms of results, but, you know, still staying so together, so positive, and still learning with every single game they come through. And I think that's testament to obviously the work they're putting in on the pitch, but also obviously off the pitch as well as a squad. So, no, really exciting to see them play at the weekend. And I think it will be a cracker of a game with both teams with definitely got a point to prove and a lot to lose.
Well, that's the thing, is that there's so many subplots around the game in terms of who needs to win by what to, you know, finish wherever on the table. But that can't really come into your mind, you know. It is, you know, I said accuracy, the word to hog it, that's what it is. It need to be accurate. Every time we've played France, they've allowed, well, certainly when I was playing, and it's still the same, they allowed the opposition into the game at some point. And JB or Hoggett was saying, just with the players at Scotland, that I think suits Scotland quite well. It was different at the weekend. We don't want to downplay a 50-point win, but I think we'll agree that the Italian defence wasn't where it should be, hasn't been where it should be. I think they've conceded something like 34 tries in the championship. Now, those tries have to be scored, and as Johnny said, we scored a good variety of tries. Some of them we probably wouldn't have scored against better opposition, but you still have to score them. So I think Saturday did exactly what it needed to do, get a level of performance, make, you know, there's some changes as well, making people play and making players perform, and you reset and you go again this week. So we'll look forward to Friday night, and it'll be, as you say, there's so many subplots, so much to look forward to. We'll enjoy it. Will you be in camp? Because you were in camp last week, and we've already said you've got England and Italy coming up. Are you in camp again with the squad this weekend?
Yeah, so we're in camp Saturday, Sunday at the weekend just gone, in prep to go into camp again this Sunday, ahead of our Six Nations. So we'll go into a bit of a bubble, similar to what the men have done. But yeah, had a good kind of, we had a 3-week kind of block together a few weeks back, and had probably, you know, one of our most concentrated blocks of training we've ever had as a squad, and it was really positive. Loads of good learning, you know, loads of time together, and that just makes such a difference, particularly from a kind of units point of view, and having that concentrated time as a squad. And then we got back together this weekend, and it's really positive in terms of just seeing like we're really just kicking on from where we left off, which, you know, in previous years you'd come back in after a few weeks away and it's maybe one, two steps back and kind of getting back up speed. But no, the girls are putting in so much work away from here and when we're at our clubs and stuff like that, that, you know, it's making that first session when you come back into camp really, really efficient and worthwhile. So no, we're in a good place, really excited to play, just can't wait to get back out there and pull on the Scotland shirt again after a wee bit of a break. But I'm so grateful to be given the opportunity, hopefully very soon, to do that. So yeah, no, everything's super positive and can't wait to get back into camp.
Good, looking forward to it. And a couple of things that weren't as positive really over the last couple of days was the results for Glasgow and Edinburgh. Glasgow lost down to Dragons, and Edinburgh lost Monday night away in Cardiff. So elements of frustration there. I think Glasgow discipline let them down. Yeah. I think they started, the first half was better than the second half, and then the Dragons seemed to have more intensity and won that discipline battle in the second half. And it was a frustrating watch, really, for Glasgow fans, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would probably kind of give a very similar overview of the game in terms of it was, you know, promising start and, you know, looked like it was going to be a good match, but I think discipline just ruined it a little bit, you know, putting them under a lot of unnecessary pressure. I mean, there's a few key highlights, you know, seeing Fraser Brown back out there and putting in shift as well, and obviously Rufus's try, which is just kind of lit up social media this week, but quite rightly so. It was an absolute wonder try, and just showing really, you know, we've talked about them a lot, but those young boys and the confidence they're obviously playing with this season, and I really can't wait to see where their careers are all going to go in the next couple of years.
It's funny, Rufus's try was brilliant, wasn't it? I mean, it was. It was one of those individual brilliant tries. And then when you look at it kind of analytically, it was so good as well in terms of beating the first couple of players. And then when you've got two players to beat, really, not just one player, the fullback, I mean, and you're flat out, you're completely flat out. It's a difficult skill as to know when to make that step. Yeah. And he made it the perfect time.
I've seen it
in you, Rachel. How, if you think, I mean, it's if you're running flat out, like two strides, you're probably covering 10, 12 metres. So you've got a fraction of a second to step at the right time, so you're not too close, you're not too far away, especially against someone like Ashton Hewitt, who's lightning. So many good elements to that. Another thing I'd say in Rufus is he's played consistently well over the last 3 or 4 weeks, every game. And you sometimes get, we've all been there as a young player, that ability to do something special, but then maybe make a mistake or an unforced error. He's been consistent for 4 or 5 games, whatever it is in a row, and really special. So it's great to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so good to see. And then, you know, he gets his rewards with inclusion in the Scotland squad this week as well, which is, like you say, completely justified from the way he's played. And it's just really nice to see, you know, young players playing at that level and being, you know, the standout players and being the leaders and probably bringing that energy in a game which probably did lack a bit of spark and a bit of energy and that about it. So, no, it's great to see. And as I say, well-deserved call-up this week as well.
Yeah, and on a disciplining in Glasgow, I think they said in commentary it was a 16th yellow card or so, the season one red card as well. It's just something that probably can come through frustration from sometimes trying too hard, sometimes just through really, you know, just needless penalties at times. Yeah. And also we've spoken about the kind of net effect of penalty after penalty after penalty, which happens. So it's something that the players will have to look at, and the coaches will have to, I'm sure they are looking at it, I know they are looking at it, but that's a big thing that has to improve for the Rainbow Cup and then, the remainder games and Pro 14, the Rainbow Cup.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been a funny one this season, I think, because we've seen it probably across all tournaments as well. So it's not just Glasgow and it's not just that tournament, but there has been more cards this year. And I think it's, you know, how quickly we're adapting to maybe how certain areas of the game are being ref. Mm-hmm. I think Glasgow have been poor, and I think in games where they're kind of losing their foothold on the game and they're under pressure in that second half in particular, we are tending to see more and more from them. So it's something that they definitely need to look at in terms of moving forward. But I would say as a kind of whole, and I guess in the Six Nations as well, we have definitely seen more instances with cards. So it's adapting to the way the game's being reffed and kind of trying to do that as quickly as you can.
Yeah, often the team on the losing end of the scoreboard tends to give away more penalties just through desperation. Edinburgh, did you see any of the Edinburgh game against Cardiff?
I've seen the bits of it, yeah. A kind of similar storyline, I think, as well, in terms of started pretty well. I thought the first half especially, they looked, you know, they definitely deserved to be ahead and get that try that they did at the start or at the end of the first half and had a lot of pressure. They set up some really nice tries throughout the game, but I think, again, just kind of that second half, it just fell away and they just didn't seem to have anything to bring it back to them.
Yeah, probably needed more points from the performance in the first half. I thought they were kind of not far ahead enough for the dominance it had, especially the territorial dominance, and a lot of possession in and around that, you know, Cardiff 22 for the certainly the first quarter of the game. So, you know, probably would have liked to have added a bit more variety perhaps to get some more points on the board. Cardiff scored some nice tries in the second half. They do play like that. They're a good side when
Yeah,
I mean,
really well-worked.
Yeah, they are sharp, but then you'll be frustrated at some of the defence. And as Richard Cockrell said afterwards, your blooding players were not a huge amount of experience against in tough situations, which can help in the long term. But it's little consolation when you want to be, you know, hitting the here and now. But both got games this weekend to right the wrongs. Although it's the Pro 14 final against Pro 14 final on Saturday, the Edinburgh and Glasgow both have games outstanding. On the Pro 14 final, one of our friends of the podcast, Mike Adamson, gets a special nod as well. He's appointed the first Scotsman ever to be the referee for the against Pro 14 final. So that caps an amazing year. It certainly adds to his amazing year with his achievements, and he'll look forward to that on Saturday.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been some comments in the press and stuff around just how professional he is and everything he does with his refereeing, and, you know, he's been fantastic this last couple of years, and just taking every opportunity he gets and kind of thriving in those environments. So, like you say, it's been a brilliant year for him, but a brilliant year for Scottish referees in general. And Holly finally, finally got out there at the weekend and again.
And did well.
Yeah, really well. So it's brilliant to see that, and so happy for Holly to, after a few disappointments and cancellations, finally get out there and get her opportunity.
Yeah, first of many for both, hopefully. And the only other thing that we should touch on, this weekend marks a special anniversary. It's been documented really throughout the whole season, but it's 150th anniversary of international rugby, obviously the first international involving Scotland and England. So throughout Scottish rugby, there's been different bits and pieces of memorabilia and content around that, but 150 years this weekend, who knows what the next 150 will hold, eh?
Yeah, no, I'm intrigued to see what kind of rugby we're playing in 150 years' time. But yeah, no, it's an amazing kind of landmark to have, and it's really nice that the men are playing obviously this week and this weekend as well on that anniversary.
Okay, well, thanks again to our guests, Johnny Beattie from the south of France, and from live inside the Scotland camp, Scotland captain, Stuart Hogg, as we prepare for this weekend's game in Paris. Rach, thanks again, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back again next week.